From a massive state budget shortfall to a drop in poll numbers and a controversial fast food minimum wage bill, Governor Gavin Newsom is facing a fair share of challenges. Ahead on Insight, Politico's California playbook gets us up to speed on all the political drama under the state capitol dome. Also, an all-volunteer group has spent the past 15 months protecting Sacramento's rivers and waterways, cleaning up over 1 million pounds of trash. The River City Waterway Alliance joins us with more about their mission. Finally, a San Juan Unified High School is home to the only radio station in Sacramento County entirely run by students. The voices of KYDS 91.5 FM explain how they serve listeners and the real-life skills they're learning along the way. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. That's all coming up today on Insight. First, here's the news. Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. It pretty much is as close as it gets for a statewide election. As of this morning, Proposition 1, Governor Newsom's $6.4 billion mental health and housing bond remains ahead by a razor-thin margin of less than 20,000 votes. And that's out of more than 7 million ballots that have been processed so far. While opponents of Prop 1 have essentially conceded, Governor Newsom is not celebrating just yet. Politico reported that Newsom postponed his scheduled State of the State address this week as Prop 1 hangs in the balance. And this is in addition to other political drama at the state capitol, from a massive budget deficit to controversy over a fast food minimum wage deal and a drop in job approval numbers. It's an interesting time under the Capitol Dome these days. Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook and joins us with all that's happening at the Capitol, including some very exciting news about women in the state legislature. Hey, Dustin, good afternoon. Welcome back to Insight.
Hey, good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's begin with Prop 1. As we mentioned, yes on Prop 1 is in the lead by a sliver. It's like 50.1% to 49.9%. If trends continue as expected, it will pass. But Prop 1 is Governor Newsom's baby. It's what he called the final piece to his mental health and homelessness reforms. What does a narrow victory mean for the governor?
It is likely, as you said, that it will still pass, just given the margin. But it is razor thin. I mean, I don't think anyone expected this would be within a tenth of 1%. So it's an embarrassment for the governor, quite frankly. He really made himself the face of this campaign. He stormed the state final weeks before the March 5th primary, promoting this measure and promoting, you know, how it is really the linchpin of his vision for housing and homelessness and mental health reform in the state. So it's a lot of a face for things to be this close and go down to the wire in this way.
Just yesterday, the governor was at the state capitol. Your Politico colleague, Rachel Bluth, caught up with the governor. What was he doing there?
So he was there meeting with Speaker Robert Rivas in the assembly, and presumably from what we understand, they were talking about the budget deficit and negotiations around that. But the governor was kind of chased by a pack of reporters as he was leaving the speaker's office. And it was kind of this awkward moment where you had, you know, half the Sacramento press corps filming the governor as he did the long walk out of the Capitol, headed back to his office a few blocks away. And really just didn't want to pontificate about the state of Prop 1. He said, I'll have something to say when all the votes are counted.
Yeah, earlier this week, we were supposed to have a State of the State address, but Politico reported that it was, it's been postponed, obviously, and it relates to Prop 1. I mean, what do you know about that?
Yeah, so the governor was supposed to deliver his annual State of the State address, his biggest speech of the year. And his office canceled Friday morning, you know, about 72 hours before he was expected to deliver this big speech. And it really was because Prop 1 is still too close to call. The speech will be rescheduled. They haven't named a new date, but it really says a lot about, just political implications of this close call for the Like I said, even if the initiative does pass, it's so tight that it has not looked good for him. And I know there's been a lot of sweating about this in Newsom's orbit. So it was just kind of really an exceptional moment to see a governor wait until the last minute to cancel such a big speech.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the only challenge that the governor is dealing with. As you mentioned, he was at the state capitol yesterday talking with Speaker Robert Rivas, you know, about the budget deficit that the state is facing. It's anywhere from like $30 billion to $70 billion range, depending on what analysis that you're leaning on and using. Where do things stand with narrowing that gap?
Yeah, so the governor, as I mentioned, he was just in the assembly yesterday negotiating with the speaker and lawmakers about his desire to take some early action to trim that deficit. The state Senate has put out a plan to cut $17 billion ahead of time before the next budget to prepare for a large deficit. The governor is on board with that idea of taking some early action. He's trying to get the assembly there as well. But, you know, the range of the deficit is one of the most fascinating pieces of all of this. Newsom's Department of Finance, they're only projecting, I say only, but it's still a significant number. They're projecting $38 billion, but that's quite a bit less than the legislative analyst's office, which is projecting $73 billion. Huge gap there. And it's been fascinating because during the Brown years, we often saw the Department of Finance take a more conservative approach with their estimates and their forecasts. And with the Newsom administration, we're seeing the Department of Finance lean a little more, not quite as conservative. They're projecting things are going to be better in the economy than the legislature's analysts. So, you know, we're still waiting to see whose numbers really pan out as the budget picture comes more into focus as we head into the spring.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a gap that is more than $30 billion between the Department of Finance and the Legislative Analyst Office. I mean, is that a normal gap when you look at previous budget years and previous governors? I mean, you touched upon Brown.
I don't think it's very, I mean, there's always differences, but the scope of this difference is pretty unusual. And I mean, it really either number could be correct at this point. We'll see. Revenue projections have been doing a little bit better recently because the stock market's been doing better. And, you know, we know that the state's revenue is really dependent on top earners and capital gains tax around stock performance. But yeah, we'll see. But yeah, that $30 billion difference is huge. And it's kind of out of the norm from what we saw during a lot of the Brown administration and what we've seen during previous years of the Newsom administration. Usually the difference is not that much.
And you mentioned that, you know, one option is dipping into the rainy day fund. And there is some talk and conversation surrounding that. Of course, like the big decisions are going to come for the May revise. So there still is a little bit of time. But Newsom also said that he wanted to secure an agreement to take early action on the state budget. Does that involve the rainy day fund, or are there other options that he's looking at?
Yeah, so Newsom has talked about using around $12 billion from the rainy day fund. In addition to that, he wants lawmakers to agree to some early budget action. This would be things like spending cuts, some program delays, using bonds to borrow money for programs, rather than use money from the state's general fund to pay for things. So that would be in addition to that rainy day fund money. And the governor really is anxious to get lawmakers moving in that direction. This governor does not like bad headlines, and he really doesn't like repeatedly seeing the headlines of potentially a $70 billion deficit. And so I think he really wants to take a big bite out of that as soon as possible.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Politico's California Playbook co-author Dustin Gardner. Dustin, a recent poll from the PPIC, that's the Public Policy Institute of California, it shows that less than half of likely voters in the state currently approve of Newsom's job performance. It's the first time since 2019 that it's dropped under 50%. Can you talk about some of the contributing factors, why you think there has been a drop in approval numbers?
Yeah, what really stood out to me about these numbers is independence. The governor's support among registered Democrats and registered Republicans, it's virtually unchanged from a year ago. But the area where he's really taken a hit is with those no party preference voters. Just to give you some detail, A year ago, February of 2023, the governor had a 53% approval rating among independents. That rating has dipped to 41% among independents. So he really has seen a very steep decline in his approval among independents. And I was chatting the other day with Mark Baldessare, the head pollster at PPIC, and he said that a lot of it seems to be independents are not taking kindly to the governor taking on a bigger national profile. Newsom's really hit the trail in the last year to campaign for President Joe Biden and for Democrats, and Newsom has leaned into this bigger national persona as a top surrogate. And as he's done that, independents are seeing him as a more partisan figure. And it's perhaps no coincidence that Newsom's approval rating among likely voters is almost identical to Joe Biden's in California. So as Newsom puts himself out there as a more partisan actor on a national stage, people are seeing him more that way, and that doesn't bode well with independents.
Yeah, there's also been some controversial reporting and a lot of reporting surrounding a fast food minimum wage bill that's going to take effect. And Governor Newsom is at the center of it. For anyone who isn't in the thick of it and isn't following every development, can you get us up to speed on what's going on with it?
Yeah, so last legislative session, last summer, there was a big compromise deal between fast food chains and labor organizations about a piece of legislation that raises the minimum wage to $20 for fast food workers from $16 to $20. And then it also creates a council that will do work and look at improving labor conditions for those workers in other areas. That piece of legislation has a pretty significant carve out in that it doesn't apply to bakeries. This is restaurants where bread is baked on the premises and sold. And, you know, that exemption didn't get a ton of attention last legislative session, but it's really become a hot potato in Sacramento because Bloomberg published a story a couple of weeks ago, essentially alleging that an ally of the governor had pushed for an exemption that would apply to Panera Bakery franchise locations. This friend of the governor is a man named Greg Flynn. He owns quite a few franchise locations, and he's actually a high school classmate of the governor from Newsom's time growing up in San Francisco. So Bloomberg put this report out there and it created a lot of controversy. But the governor's office said that Panera is actually not exempt from the law. They will be required to pay the minimum wage according to the legal interpretation from Newsom's office. And Greg Flynn, that franchise owner, he's even said that he plans to pay his workers $20 minimum wage. So in terms of where we are today, it's, you know, this controversy hasn't quite gone away, but in terms of Panera's actual exemption, it seems like they're going to be following the law from what we've been told.
And this minimum wage, it kicks in on April 1st?
That's correct.
Okay, so that's just in a few weeks from now. We only have about 2 minutes left, and I want to actually end with some encouraging news out of the Capitol. So in this morning's California Playbook, which you co-author, the headline reads, "The future is female in the California Senate." Explain.
Yeah, so the Senate is on track to be majority female lawmaker at the end of this year after the election cycle. It looks like, according to a projection from Close the Gap, which is a group that works to elect female legislators, according to their projection, 21 of the 40 senators will be women. And this is a first in state history. It's the first time that either chamber in the legislature will have achieved gender parity. That number is not quite guaranteed at this point. You know, we still have to see the results of the election, but they're pretty confident in making that projection based on the results of the primary and the number of races where women are the heavy favorites, or where there are only women running. California's been a state for 174 years, and this is huge because it would be the first time that something like that's happened.
Yeah, it's been a minute, 2024. Dustin, as always, thank you for joining us and getting us up to speed on what's going on at the state capitol.
Thanks for having me.
Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Up next, we're going to meet an all-volunteer group that has spent the past 15 months protecting Sacramento's rivers and waterways, cleaning up over 1 million pounds of trash. The River City Waterway Alliance joins us with more about their mission. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Sacramento's rivers and waterways, they're a jewel. They provide not only ecologically diverse habitats for plants and wildlife, but also a wide array of opportunities for us to get outside and just take it all in. But over the years, these natural spaces have been degraded by a buildup of trash and debris, which has been compounded by ongoing issues from littering, a lack of government resources to clean everything up, and Sacramento's homelessness crisis. Just over a year ago, an all-volunteer group formed dedicated to cleaning, restoring, and protecting these waterways and ecosystems. And their work has already paid off. They've removed over 1.2 million pounds of trash over the past 15 months. Here to tell us more are Crystal Tobias and Roland Brady, the president and vice president of the Sacramento Area Creeks Council, and Mark Baker, co-founder of the River City Waterway Alliance. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Thanks for making the trip. Okay, Crystal, I want to start with you. How did you all get interested in working to clean up our local rivers and waterways?
Well, I'm a local girl born in Sacramento, and I've been going down to the American River since I was 5 years old. I've had a lot of experience along our waterways, Folsom Lake, Lake Natoma, and I just realized that something needed to be done years ago. Oh, I've been doing these kinds of cleanups for 30 years. The habitat down there is amazing, and nobody else was picking the stuff up when I started. And so I worked with the American River Parkway Foundation, Save the American River Association, worked independently, and now I live by a state park and I clean up there. But the rivers, the opportunity to work with Dr. Brady in 2018 really opened my eyes. And it just was natural because I love this environment and I want to take care of it.
How so? What happened in 2018? Since you've been at it for decades now.
Well, I met Dr. Brady, and he had a project on Steelhead Creek, which is a salmonid creek, which houses steelhead trout and Chinook salmon. And he had been doing a study on Steelhead Creek about the kinds of trash that is in the water and how it's affecting the waterway. He'll talk more about that. But he came to a meeting that we both attended and asked for assistance with this project. I happened to have some spare time and said, okay, I'll be there. Little did I know what I was getting into, but I just fell in love with that area and realized that we could make a difference down there.
Well, Dr. Brady, Roland, I mean, you have a PhD in geology. You specialize in watershed hydrology and stream restoration, so this seems right up your alley. What would you like people to know about, you know, our rivers and creeks and other waterways in Sacramento?
Well, what's most important is that these are absolute arteries of life in a quite arid environment. And all of the creeks that we've been working on drain ultimately into the Sacramento River and then into the San Francisco Bay and the ocean. So what happens on a very local level, the little creek that may be in your backyard, has an effect ultimately on the delta and the ocean itself. And these lifelines of habitat were venerated by the native population, and then ultimately they were occupied and used, and they're being maligned now from benign neglect and also general ignorance and misuse of the land. So what we're doing is to try to reverse that history and bring these back to the corridors of life that they truly represent.
Mm. Well, Mark, I mean, you are the co-founder of the River City Waterway Alliance. Tell us the backstory. How did this all come about?
Yeah, so the four co-founders, myself, David Ingram, Kathleen Ford, and Lisa Sanchez, were all part of another small cleanup group. And we met, and we met all these other pioneers of the waterways, and we all fell in love with the creeks and the parkway. I mean, I've always been out playing on the parkway my entire life, but we saw the need for a waterway-specific group. I mean, we saw the travesty, the terrible conditions, all the homeless people and everything living on our creeks and rivers, and nobody was cleaning up after them. You know, they move out, they leave their trash, and there's no way that county employees can keep up with all the trash. And so we decided to start our own little group with the pioneers that have been working on it for 30, 40 years. And so over the last, since January, we started in January of 2023, and we've done 385 cleanups since then. I mean, that's almost four to six to eight cleanups every week somewhere on our waterways.
It's almost daily.
I mean, it's pretty close. I mean, we always schedule four cleanups every week, and often we'll do as many as eight cleanups.
Well, and the fact that you've been able to pick up, you know, 1.2 million pounds of trash since January of last year, 2023, I mean, I would imagine you have a good group of volunteers who all believe in the same mission and wanting to protect the beauty of Sacramento's waterways.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so proud of our volunteers. It's just amazing that, you know, we have over 11,000 volunteer hours. We've developed this fantastic community of people that like to go out three times a week, picking up 10,000 pounds of trash every week, even more than that. And it's our exercise program. It's our social group. And, you know, we just all love each other.
Crystal, what are some of the trash and debris that is more problematic that you're seeing when you go out there?
The most problematic are the large textiles, and that would be tents, tarps, clothing, large pieces of plastic, mattresses, and foam pads, because what those do when they get wet, they sink to the bottom of the waterway, and they armor the bottom of the channel, which it disrupts the life cycle of the critters that live in the substrate. Another thing is shopping carts. Shopping carts bring in more debris, and when they're in the water, they grab the debris that is floating downstream, and also there's a non-native plant called water primrose that will grow up around the shopping cart, and it blocks the fish passage. And so those are the most damaging. But we also find thousands of hypodermic needles and human waste and toxic waste, empty herbicide and pesticide bottles, thousands, literally thousands of batteries. So we try and, you know, keep that stuff out and separate. But that's probably the most damaging. But we find everything, and we some of us have little collections of treasures that we we collect. And we try and make it fun. I mean, it is fun. And you can tell people keep coming back. But it's also, you have to laugh or you cry.
Yeah. Are there certain rivers or parts of the river or creeks that seem to be more polluted with debris?
Well, Steelhead Creek, certainly, because it runs parallel to the American River near the downtown area in Discovery Park. And that is a very popular area with the unhoused population. It's close to services. It's close to the North Gate and Gardenland area. And that creek and Bannon Island in particular were really, really badly damaged. But we have we've developed a great working relationship with Sacramento County Parks, and they have taken this very seriously and have begun making sure that that this kind of activity is not happening in the park. Bannon Island, Mark coordinated like 22 cleanups this last summer of Bannon Island.
32.
And some of those folks had lived down there for 20 years, and there were structures that they had built. And this is a sensitive nature area. So we can see that the work that we've been doing has made a difference, and partnering with the Sacramento County and the other agencies has been huge for us. Sacramento County, the city to some extent, RD 1000, which takes care of the levees on one side of the creek, and American River Flood on the other side, and Sacramento who gave us the horse grant?
Regional Sanitation.
Sacramento Regional Sanitation has been a great partner, and now we also work with a group called Forensic Clean that does come in, and they take our trash away a lot of times, so we don't have to haul it to the dump. We do have a trailer that was funded by Regional San, and that's been great, but it's even better when the agencies will come and take our trash away for us because it's a lot of trash.
There's a lot of collaboration going on.
I mean,
a lot of volunteers, but also a lot of local agencies that are helping out as well. I mean, Roland, Crystal touched upon the harm that having debris and just contaminated materials, the harm it can have on the waterway. But removing 1.2 million pounds of trash, I mean, that seems like a lot. How does this benefit, you know, the habitat and the critters and, you know, and the species that call this area home?
Well, one of the main things, as Crystal mentioned, is that the textiles armor the bottom and they make a deoxygenated area in the substrate. And oxygen is the life of all organisms. And so the life is not so much in the water of the stream, but it's in the water that's in the sediment in the bottom of the stream. And by removing the textiles, it makes the sediment available to the oxygen, and high flows then stir up that sediment and restore the life. So that's the main contribution. But also with the presence of camps along the side of the streams, there's been the removal of woody vegetation. There's compaction of the soil. We did a study and found that in the tent sites, the soil is compacted 3 to 5 times more than the native soil is. And that favors non-native vegetation, weeds and things like that. And it also encourages a type of erosion that cuts rills, cuts grooves into the side of the banks, which encourages sedimentation in the stream. So there are a number of benefits of removing this material.
I'm curious, as we wind down this conversation, we have a few minutes left. If someone's listening to this, they actually, you know, go for daily walks on whether it's the Sacramento River, the American River, or a creek in their neighborhood. What tips and information should they keep in mind so they can be part of the solution if they see some debris and some littering taking place?
Well, they can. What I do is I always have a little bag with me and wear gloves, and I take my pogie with me wherever I go. And a pogie is a trash grabber, and they can pick up trash in their own neighborhood. They can go on to the River City Waterway Alliance YouTube channel or Facebook page and see some of the large-scale cleanups that we do. They can support Sacramento Area Creeks Council because we then, in turn, support our volunteers with refreshments, but mostly equipment and supplies. And they can take action in their own community. They can adopt a little creek in their neighborhood or even, I pull over when I see a plastic bag on the street in danger of going down a drain, because I look at it as one last plastic bag that's going to go out to the Pacific garbage patch in the ocean. And I'm extreme, but there are ways that people can help just every day in their own little lives.
Yeah, what seems to be small, like maybe it's just a piece of plastic, is actually a big thing, because all the little things add up, especially small pieces of plastic like straws and stuff that can be really difficult.
Animals eat that stuff. They don't know that it's not food, but they can't digest it. And it's important to note that what we're doing is not for aesthetic reasons. It's not a beautification campaign, although that is an effect of what we do. What we're doing is environmental restoration, trying to rejuvenate the natural processes that are encumbered by all of the debris and the habitation.
Mark, what does it mean to you? We only have 30 seconds left that, you know, a year plus in, you know, you've had a robust turnout for the River City Waterway Alliance.
Well, we have a ton of fun. I mean, it's amazing how much fun we have at our cleanups. So like Crystal said, check us out on Facebook to find out about our upcoming cleanups, and check us out on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. We make music videos for almost every cleanup we do. We have over 242 music videos on Facebook. It's a blast. And it's exercise with a purpose. None of us even need to join a gym.
Exercise and a party.
Well, and a party. That's good, too.
Mark, and if you volunteer, you get free lunch.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm down for that. Mark, Crystal, and Roland, thank you for stopping by. It was nice talking to you three.
Thank you very much.
Crystal, Tobias, and Roland Brady are the president and vice president of the Sacramento Area Creeks Council. Mark Baker is the co-founder of the River City Waterway Alliance, talking to us about how they've picked up 1.2 million pounds of trash in just 15 months along Sacramento's rivers, creeks, and other waterways. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. A high school in San Juan Unified School District is home to the only radio station entirely run by students in Sacramento County. KYDS 91.5 FM has been at El Camino Fundamental High School since 1978, broadcasting commercial-free music 24/7 year-round. Here's a little taste.
You are listening to KYDS 91.5 FM Sacramento. I'm DJ Frosty.
And I'm The Lizard.
You just heard Heartbreaker by Led Zeppelin. Next up, what do we have?
Wanted Dead or Alive by Bon Jovi and What's Your Name by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
And that is just a sample of KYDS 91.5 FM. The educational radio station was profiled this month by Solving Sacramento. That's a journalism collaborative and a partner of CAP Radio. Solving Sacramento journalist Helen Harlan introduces us to the voices behind KYDS. And we're also joined by El Camino Fundamental High School students, Tori Norley and Winston Huber. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Doing great, thank you. Doing better now that you all are here. Helen, I want to start with you because this all sprung from your piece. How did you find out about this radio station?
So I grew up in Sacramento. I actually went to Sacramento Country Day, not far from El Camino. And I went to UCLA, and I was in LA for 20 years. And then I came back home during the pandemic. And the first week I was home, I sent my friend Ann from high school a text. And I was like, what radio are we listening to in our cars? Because 106.5 was gone, 100.5 was gone. And she said, hey, the kids at El Camino are running a radio station. You should listen. And I put it on my dials in my car, and like the rest is history.
What stands out to you about this radio station? It obviously struck a chord with you.
Well, I think I was in LA for 20 years, and I think these kids are running just as high quality an independent radio station as KCRW is doing it down there. They're 88.9 SoCal Sound. I love those radio stations. I listen to them in my car, but I wanted to listen to something here in Sacramento. And so I found KYDS. And yeah, I think their playlists are just as good as anything that independent radio DJs are probably doing in way bigger outlets and way bigger cities all over the country, and they're 17.
That is awesome. All right, Tori, well, how long have you been involved? What attracted you to being part of a radio station in high school?
I've been a DJ for KYDS for the past 4 years. So I started my freshman year, but it was during COVID. So we used to do pre-recorded shows. And then when we came back for hybrid school, I met my current radio partner, The Lizard, and Mr. Sumpter just kind of threw us into the station and was like, here's what you do. Have fun.
And what do you love most about it? Because now that you're 4 years in, you kept at it, so you must have grown a lot, and there's a lot of good nuggets in there.
Yeah, I really love just being able to play whatever I want to play. If I find new music, I'm allowed to bring it in as long as it's clean and we have it purchased. But I just really love the idea of getting to share the music I like with other people as well.
Yeah. Well, Winston, you're a senior as well. What do you love about being part of KYDS?
It really gave me a sense of direction of what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go with my life and the career that I wanted to pursue, because going into high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do or what I wanted to be, but I had prior media knowledge back at middle school at Arden, and I heard about the media program at El Camino. I was like, ooh, this sounds great. I went on to do it, and now I'm the secretary, and I love it.
So it's just the beginning of what's hopefully a broadcasting career for you.
Hopefully, yes.
Wonderful. We're going to take a little listen of some of the sound that you shared with us, Helen. The first are the morning announcements, which brought me back to high school. Take a listen.
Good morning, Eagles. It's DJ T,
DJ Indigo,
and The Lizard.
If you want to buy a senior sweatshirt or crew neck, they are $35 in room 40.
Tonight, boys basketball plays at Sacramento Charter.
And girls basketball has their senior night here at UC. Senior announcements are at 5:15. Varsity starts at 6. The theme for the game is Pink Out.
Today is the end of the grading period.
Signups for a blood drive are in the quad at lunch, and the actual blood drive will be on Wednesday.
And on Tuesday, Club Rush will happen in the quad, as it'll be the second Club Rush of the block.
Have a great weekend, Eagles.
So DJT, that's you. You're part of that trio with the morning announcements. What do you like about, the response that you get from listeners? Because listeners are not just your students, your peers. I mean, they're also, listeners like Helen.
Yeah. So as far as morning announcements, I think a lot of people get easily more informed in that sense. So some students will be like, I didn't even know that was happening. So it gives a lot of insight to just what's going on around the school. And responses from just KYDS listeners in general are always very positive feedback. And it's good to hear that people enjoy what we do so that we can continue it. And I just think it's great.
Yeah, I like the video component to the morning announcements as well. I was watching one on the website. It's like you're sitting at an anchor desk and just kind of laying out all the events and things to know for the week, which definitely is cool and helps break it down for students. You mentioned Mr. Sumpter. That's the teacher, Matt Sumpter. Tell us about him. What do you like about him, Tori?
He treats us as basically adults and employees rather than just students. So we learn how to do things. We learn new skills throughout the media course, and we get treated like we have our own responsibilities. So we're less of a student and more of an employee or coworker or something of that sort. So we have to be very responsible for ourselves, and you just learn how to be very independent in the media class.
And I would imagine, Winston, this kind of sparked a career that you want to pursue outside of high school. I would think that Matt Sumpter, the teacher, was pretty instrumental in that.
Well, absolutely. He really helped me. He really took me under his wing and guided me on how to be who I am. And it really helps a lot of people at the school find their voice and become a little more outspoken.
Let's take a listen to a little part of what he told Helen.
First of all, the first day I tell them, hey, I treat you like employees.
That's what I was telling her earlier. So
that's what these guys have heard. And then the second thing is any lecturing I do, I basically we walk through everything together. It's 15 minutes. Maybe 20 minutes. It's a short burst. And then it's get them going, because my philosophy is, hey, you got to put your hands in it. You got to dig in, make the mistakes, be comfortable making mistakes so that you experiment, get better. And then we'll just iterate.
And that is Matt Sumpter, who is the teacher. Helen, what stands out to you about his teaching approach?
That they all really love it. I mean, that's, I don't want to oversimplify anything, but I was a theater kid in high school, and I loved it so much. And Tech Week the week before we put up the show, where we were there all night, and it felt like we were working right in a real theater. And being around these kids reminded me of that feeling. And I didn't have any class in high school or college that was anything like what these kids are doing. So I guess what stands out to me is it's very new. It's a whole new world for me to learn about as well. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but like they love the guy. Like he's kind of out of a 90s sitcom teacher got a vibe, you know. So he's doing really good things for these kids when they're there. And it sounds like they're taking all of these skills and also the friendships and the way they've developed emotionally and using them as they move on after high school.
Yeah, I mean, this is the only high school run radio station in Sacramento County, which is wonderful that it's broadcasted to the community. It's also part of El Camino Fundamental High School CTE pathway, and that stands for Career Technical Education. So, Helen, for those who are unfamiliar, what is a CTE pathway?
Well, I believe it's one of three that El Camino offers, and I'm from what I learned doing the article, these kids are getting a media education that when I was going to college, people went to college to get. And we were joking out front that if there was some sort of like alien apocalypse and all of the adults here at Cap Radio, we were all like put to sleep. I think that Winston and T could run the place because they have this certificate. They're completers. They've learned audio editing. They've learned video editing. They know what the board means. I mean, they know all of this stuff so much better than me. And I've been trying to teach myself this for 10 years on like YouTube tutorials. So it's a really it's a practical hands-on job skill that they have when they're graduating from high school, that they're going to have these. I think both of these guys are 17 and they could already run the place.
Yeah. I mean, Tori, you've been doing this for 4 years now. So you saw some of your high school elders, you know, graduate and go to college. Do you see them still applying the skills that they learned at KYDS even after high school?
Yeah, totally. One of our presidents in the past year, I don't know where he goes to school, but he actually is on the college radio. And so it's super cool to see that because he's passing on these skills he learned in radio up next to this college radio. And also, some of our past people also have other hobbies. Like, I know we have our vice president from 2 years ago. He comes back and takes pictures for our drama productions. So they have a lot to do with, like, the media fields and their skills they learned.
That's awesome. And Winston, I would also think that doing something like this, you know, high school can be stressful. It's not always fun. It can be tough sometimes. This also seems like a nice, healthy outlet, you know, if maybe you're having a rough day.
Well, absolutely. You could come in here and go on the radio and play whatever music you want and just sort of escape, just chill in the studio and just have a good time with your friends and anyone who's in the club and wants to hang out. It's just an escape.
Do you have like a style? How would you describe your playlist and what you like to play?
My playlist is all over the place. I have a lot of different music. I play a lot of old like 80s and 90s songs, but I mix it in with some more modern and current R&B and hip hop. I play a lot of rock and a little bit of heavy metal. It's all over the place.
How about you, Tori?
I think mostly I play a lot of newer stuff. A lot of like indie or some pop genres.
And there's something for everyone. Well, Tori, Winston, and Helen, thank you for stopping by. It was great talking to you three.
Thank you very much.
Helen Harlan is a journalist with Solving Sacramento, sharing her reporting on KYDS, the only high school student-run radio station in Sacramento County, and it's based at El Camino Fundamental High School. We're also joined by KYDS students Tori Norley and Winston Huber. And with that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast, and if you want to reach out to us, you can send us an email at insight@capradio.org. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.